right, E. We are live. Hey, hey. There you go. You can hear that, huh, E?
I can hear it, but it's low.
Is it low? Oh, no. This, that raw, that dope, that pure. Still low? Cocaine. That's all right, we'll fix it later. This, that raw, that dope, that pure, uncut cocaine. Got that Gino. All that weight I lost, I gained it back.
Get him, Gino, get him. Social distancing. Got released, right, did another prison sentence. So many days that I spent repenting. Come on, Gino. Cause things not going the way I envision. I'm rapping like down. Me. Come on, from Gino. A different dimension. I only got love for particular bitches. You were struggling vicious, wishing that you hit me. Now you call that other nigga your baby. Yeah. Wet works. My estimated net worth is enough to make your chest hurt. Knees buckle. You captivated. Back in our last days, I was emasculated. Come on, you told Gino. Here me we I go. Would never amount to two shits. Now I get for a verse what I got for two bricks. Strange love, this is Stanley Kubrick. Eyes right, wide shut while I'm getting back, you back, back, back in the day. Bro. I absolutely do. Shout out to Gino Pacino. Good morning, Chicago and the rest of the world.
Good morning.
Welcome to the Money, Sex, Gen X podcast. I am your host with the most, the man with the plan, the Scotty Pippen of podcast pimping. And I am joined today by the Titan, or with the Titan of Teen Tech, music mogul in the making, the Rasheed Wallace of podcast now.
Indeed, indeed, indeed.
My co-host, my brother, indeed. The homie, Big Stu.
We are back.
We are back. We are back. Welcome to season three, episode number 6. Are you soft for living in the suburbs? We do have a special guest today, and I want to introduce that brother real quick.
Mm-hmm.
We are honored to have the Grammy-nominated multi-platinum music producer, Detroit's very own, Stand Up, the electrifying, filthy Rockwell.
Wow. Let me give him a prop. Give him a wow. Let's give him a bomb, bro. Filthy Rockwell in the building. Filthy Rockwell.
What's up, man? How's it going?
Detroit's
chilling, man. How's it going, man?
Everything is going good. I want to tell the audience, if they don't know, I know the hip-hop heads definitely do. I talked to you a couple weeks ago. I was impressed by your humbleness and your sincerity. So I want to salute you for coming on the show today. I want to tell the audience a little bit more about you. So this brother is an ASCAP award-winning artist, and he holds down a number of different roles in the music industry. He is a songwriter, arranger, composer, exec. He's also an A&R. And guess what? He's worked with some of your favorite artists, including George Clinton, Big Sean, Kanye West, 2 Chainz, one of my favorites, Pusha T, Joe Budden, and Slaughterhouse.
Wow.
And one of the things that I was impressed the most about Filthy is at the end of 2020, from what I understand, you launched the Filthy Americans Art and Cultural Preservation Center located in Northwest Detroit. And that space includes a streetwear shop, dope music, which I've seen a lot of IG Live showcasing, and is also an art venue.
Wow.
Welcome to the show, sir.
Unbelievable. Thank you. Unbelievable.
Word.
You do so, all of that, bro?
Oh, what's going
on? He do all of that?
Yeah, working on it, man. You left out I was Grammy nominated in multi-platinum.
Dang.
Wow, how could I do that? That's one of the key points. Definitely Grammy nominated. Multi-platinum. Hey, yo, one thing that I found out today, I don't know if this is true, Filthy, but did you co-produce the song Mercy with Ye?
I wrote on it.
Okay. Yeah, I'm a social media person that put that up. And I'm like, wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I wrote on it. I contributed.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
One of my favorite joints. So how's life in Detroit right now? What's going on?
Man, it's cold outside. Yes, it's snow everywhere. You know what I'm saying? But it's all good, man. I mean, it's been great. You know, we in the pandemic, but you know what I'm saying? Filthy Americans, man. We marching through it, man. You know, it's been great, man. You know, it's been quiet around here, you know, lately, but you know, it's still, you know, it's Detroit. You know what it is, man. It's like Chicago, man. You know how I go.
No question. Is it quiet because it's too cold to come outside? What's going on?
I mean, you know, the pandemic then quieted things down. You know, it's not a lot of things open. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The Filthy American Arts and Cultural Preservation Center been open, though. I opened November the 18th, so I've been doing events. You know what I'm saying? Like, I had Keith Murray in town. I did a Murray Merry Christmas event with Keith Murray. Keith Murray in town. You know, I've had all the legendary Detroit DJs. They've been doing the Super Friends versus the Legion of Doom, which is my my DJ crew, because you know I'm an evil supervillain. So I just been having fun through it, man. We just been having fun, man. We've been just doing events, man. We did a Christmas event there where, we've been just been having fun through it, man. Just trying to, you know what I'm saying, keep the spirits up, you know what I'm saying? Keep everybody's spirits high throughout this craziness we're going through, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no question, man. I always respect when people are able to push through in the middle of tough circumstances, because a lot of people might be like, yo, it's a pandemic right now. This is not the time to open up a cultural center. This is not the time to do that. Like, Big Stu and I, we started this podcast right at the beginning of the pandemic. And we were like, yo, this is the perfect time to do it. We can't really go outside like that. Let's go ahead and make this happen. Shake it down. So I respect that. I saw a lot of the videos on IG when you had the Christmas party, when you had Keith Murray on there. I wanted to ask you, did you have like a particular inspiration other than just kind of wanting to do more for Detroit? But like, why a cultural center?
Because I'm the preserver of the culture. So that's my whole thing about, you know, the whole thing. So it was like, you know, instead of just opening up a place where I'm selling T-shirts, you know, I didn't really want to just sell T-shirts. When I started my brand, that wasn't the idea. You know what I'm saying? It was to, you know, create a real brand that's based around, you know, history and culture and, you know, and stuff like that, and music. And, you know, so that's why I did it. But as I created the brand, you know what I'm saying, the idea I had, I couldn't really present it fully as just putting it on T-shirts, because I was doing pop-ups for like a year or two for a while. But I had created the brand like probably like seven and a half years ago, maybe like around 2010, or that's where it started. I started incubating, creating it. So I just, you know, from that point to this point, I was just putting this whole thing together, but I just couldn't just sell T-shirts, you know what I'm saying? Right. Or just sell merch. So, you know, the center, it just, man, honestly, man, like, this space chose me, to be honest. Like, that's the best way I could put it, to tell you the truth. Like, the way this whole thing came about, man, it was, like, meant to be. Like, and the only way I could really present what I was doing was to have my own space, you know what I'm saying? And it couldn't just be a store, you know what I'm saying?
No doubt. No, I feel you on that. And now I was going to ask you, I always am always very interested in projects that include real estate. So the real estate component of this, was that hard to pull together? Because I know you said you wanted to have the space, but like in terms of the acquisition of the property, was that a difficult process?
So, man, so check it out. I was doing pop-ups, right? So I was just, you know, I really wasn't, you know, I really wasn't trying to looking for a space for real, like a store. So I had a couple of offers, and then it was this place here called the Detroit Shipping Company. And it's this cool spot that's made of all shipping containers, right? It's this big place, but it's made of all shipping containers, and it's dope. So they wanted me to put a spot over there. So I was like, oh, okay, so this is unique. I will do it over here. So I was, you know, talking to them, but, you know, to pivot from that, like how I got to this spot, just to, you know, explain to you how I got this space was, so when I first started my brand, I used to do pop-ups, right? Like, so about five, six years ago, I was doing a pop-up down the street from this place at this really cool spot called the Marble Bar. This is where, like, most of the, like, dope techno, you know, techno shows and indie rock shows and stuff like that. They do a lot of little cool events like that down there, you know, like some dope hip-hop shows, stuff like that. So I was at a pop-up down there one day. So one night, so when I left around like 2 a.m, down the street, it was these, nah, this is in the hood. This is in the ghetto, like, right? So this is like, this spot is in like a, it's like in Detroit, in the middle of Detroit. So when I left, it was like some kids, some dudes on at the end of the block skating on skateboards. This is not like, this didn't exist in Detroit, right? Like, like back then. So it's like, and it's 2 a.m, and this white boys, they like skating in the hood. And I'm like, what the fuck is, you know what I'm saying? What is this? So I'm looking down the street. Now, this is before I, and that's what, this was when I started shaping the identity of, like, when I saw them skating, right? I had already had my idea. I had trademarked What Up Though and stuff like that. But this is when it all like came to me, like, oh man, I'm gonna make a skate brand. That's when I was like, oh, because I always had a love for skating since I was a kid, right? But that didn't exist in the hood. It just didn't exist. It was something I watched on TV. You know what I'm saying? We saw that on TV and white kids on TV skating. So skating wasn't something we did. So if we had skateboards, we might have them, but it wasn't, you know what I'm saying? So seeing that was like inspiring to me to see them. And I was like, oh man. So the long story short, 5 years later, one of my homies who worked for the mayor's office, who just been a strong supporter of my brand, his name is Adrian Tony. He's it's this thing in Detroit called in the United States they just brought here, right? Called the 24-hour economy. They trying it in 7 cities right now. And Detroit just happens to be one of the cities that they're trying the 24-hour economy in. So they it's an area where the whole area is 24 hours. It could be open for 24 hours. My store could be open for 24 hours. If you had a coffee shop, a record shop, whatever you got, it could be open for 24 hours in this area, right? So
nice.
So I'm just trying to speed y'all up. I know I'm jumping around, but I'm trying to.
No, you're good.
Because I definitely got some questions for you about the context, but keep going because I got some questions for you about that. But okay. Keep going, please.
So 5 years. So you know. So my man, he been supporting my brand. He just been really supportive. His name is Adrian Tony. That's my guy. So he's been really supportive of the brand. So he called me one day and he like, yo, I know you thinking about opening up that spot where you at, but you shouldn't open it here. You should come open it at this other space that they're opening. It's in the 24-hour economy. I don't have a lot of time to explain a lot to you, but just trust me, you got to come over here and you have to take this place. I don't care what they tell you, you have to take it. So he's like, I'm going to set this meeting up. So I come over there and meet with the developers. And the crazy thing is the spot where I go meet with the developers in this space is in the spot where the kids were skating at 5 years ago at 2 a.m, right?
Right.
So now y'all feel me where I'm coming from. So now I'm like, oh man, like now Adrian knows none of this story, right? But when I go here, I'm like, man, this is crazy, right? So I know I gotta take it. So that's how I got here. Like, and it was they wanted me, I'm the first person they put over here in this area and stuff. Like it's no other business. It's like it's other brand, it's a couple of other people over there. It's like two other brands over there. It's like the big recycling center thing is over here too. But it's like not really a lot over here. I'm the first person to come over here. So I'm like, I'm super happy to just come over here. And it's just a place, it's called Art Park. So it's where like artists come from all over the world to come and graffiti artists, and you know, they just come from all over the world just to do art here. Like, it's a lot of artists that from New York, Destin Dunn, a lot of stuff here. It's like all of the whole area is just, it's just crazy, and it's like no other space like this in Detroit. A lot of people come here and they like, they feel like it reminds them of Berlin. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just a really unique area, and they're about to start building and stuff over there. But I'm just happy to be the first person over here. And it had the spot where these kids were skating at. I learned that Levi's had built, like, the story is so crazy. Levi's had built this, they had paid these guys to build this little skate, this little thing, just so they can shoot this promo, right? Oh. So they built it, the kid, the dudes, they built the little skate thing, but it was like a thing for the community. So everybody was skated. It was like a popular skate park, a popular little skate. It's like a street skate thing, right? So that was some years ago when Levi's paid these guys to build it. But the crazy thing about this whole story, right, is I came up with this idea when I got over here to revitalize the skate park, because now it's like kind of like messed up, because like the city had like went through there and like tried to plow snow and broke the thing up, and they people still come over here frequenting the area, right, all the time, and do photo shoots and they skate and all of this. So my idea was to revitalize it, you know what I'm saying, and you know, adopt the whole area. Like, oh man, this is dope. Like, I, you know, it's like abandoned by the city, but you know, you know, one man's trash is another man's treasure, right? So we're like, oh man, this is great. This is gonna be, you know, so we just adopted it and cleaned it up and everything. So, and the craziest part of the story is 3 days ago, I had this idea to revitalize the skate park, right? But I didn't really know how I was gonna do it because I know nothing about it, you know. And so 3 days ago, I have a meeting with a guy. And it just so happened to be the very guy that built the skate park in the first place, right? So he like, I tell him my idea. He love it. He like, yo, we're gonna help you. The community is gonna come in and help you rebuild it. We're gonna all build it. We just need you to buy the materials, and we're gonna build it for free. So now it's gonna be super dope. And I got the word from the city. They're not gonna put traffic through there. They're gonna really like let us have this area. So nice. We're gonna rebuild it. You know, I'm all my, like, my event starting from now on that I'm doing is like all geared towards raising money to rebuild the skate park, because we wanna, like, you know, we're gonna have it cracking by the summer. You know what I'm saying? So I know I just told y'all a long, you know, story, but that's pretty much how I got here. Like, so yeah, this area chose me. You know what I'm saying? As soon as I had the idea for what I wanted to do, like, all the pieces of the puzzle started falling in place, to be quite honest.
Indeed. Stu, you have some questions?
Sorry, I put myself on mute. Let me ask you a couple of questions, man, about how Detroit are you? I have strong Detroit connections, man. Word. School, Asbury Park and Schoolcraft connections, bro. Back in the 80s connection. So how Detroit are you? Are you born and raised in Detroit?
Yeah, Mr. Detroit, born and raised.
No doubt.
On the east side too, so super Detroit.
So what high school Detroit?
I went to Osborne, but not for long.
Okay. I know a lot of people that went to, I believe it was Cass.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of my people went to Cass.
Yeah, see, so look, check it out. So Detroit, right? When we're talking about Detroit, So Detroit is Detroit. All of Detroit is Detroit. But the black people, when it comes to the black people in Detroit, the black people lived on the east side of Detroit first. Back in the 30s and the 40s.
That's what I'm talking about right here.
I'm a historian too.
The reason I want to, Detroit is one of the nation's most underrated cities. Yet it's one of the backbones of this country. But yeah, Detroit gets little to no love. Detroit gets little love.
The other thing I found out about Detroit, and you all probably knew this already, it has one of the highest populations of black people out of the city.
It's the blackest city in America.
Yeah. I love Detroit. But keep going, man, please.
in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s, Detroit was a black utopia. We had all black politicians.
Indeed.
Black mayor, black police chief. It was all black. It was all black people. That's why I got an album. I put out an album called Filthy America. And that's what it's about. It's talking about the it's an instrumental based album, but it's like the way I put it together, like I put other things in it to like create like a story. It's a storyline. It's storyline hip hop. But it talks about it tells a story about black people dreaming, you know, it's dreaming in color, the beautiful nightmare. And dreaming in color is black people dreaming that if we all had a black utopia, how we could all just, you know, get away from white supremacy and life would be so great. Right. Well, Detroit is the example of what it would be like if we all had a black utopia, because we did have a black utopia. And the beautiful nightmare is the result of what Detroit turned into.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? But Detroit is the blackest city. It was the blackest city in America. It's gentrified now. You know what I'm saying? Like, we got a white mayor. And so, you know, the game is changing. But shout out to the white mayor, because that's him that put me over here.
Help you out.
Detroit. So that's what I was going to say. I'm sorry about that. So Detroit, when we talk about Detroit, and I know you was talking about cast and stuff like that, but in Detroit, it's like, you know, like the black people, and it's black people all over Detroit.
Sure,
I'm saying is, in Detroit, the very first black people, the very root of black people, you know, the people where they moved, they was on the east side, the side where I'm from. Like, that's where the original Detroiters started. You know,
now how far is that from Motown?
Well, check it out. That's the neighborhood I'm in.
Street
from Motown. Yeah. The 24-hour economy goes from Motown to the Filthy American. So, you know what I'm saying?
Motown was in Motown is in Northwest Detroit.
Yeah. At the end of my block. It's at the end of my block. Yeah, so I'm in that neighborhood. So, you know, it's like, yeah, we in that neighborhood. They right down the street from us. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, okay. I'm in conversations like with them. I rock with Motown, man.
Okay.
Yep.
Now, but, Filthy, I want to ask you this before we dive into this. We're going to dive into
But when I was talking about Detroit, I'm talking about Roots. Alex Haley is from the east side of Detroit. I'm talking about the east side. The east side is where before Elijah Muhammad,
You're talking about you're not talking about Clarence 13X, are you?
No,
got me.
No,
stuck.
Elijah Muhammad. Detroit.
Elijah's from Detroit.
Elijah Muhammad.
Now we got to do the actual factuals.
East side of Detroit, Paradise Valley is where they started. That whole movement started on the east side of Detroit, in Paradise Valley, downtown Detroit. That's where it started. That's where Temple One is right now in Detroit.
Yeah, I do know that. I know Temple One.
Yeah, that's why it's Temple One, because this is where they started.
You are correct.
But Detroit, we wasn't buying it. Like, you know, Detroiters, they just didn't buy into it. So they took it to Chicago, and it worked. You know what I'm
saying? Are you talking about Wallace Farah Muhammad?
No, I'm talking about Elijah Muhammad.
Okay, it does say Elijah Muhammad took over in Detroit, but it also says Wallace arrived in Detroit in 1930.
Yeah, you're talking about, that's the original OG. He's number one. You're talking about Farad.
Yeah, Wallace was
number one. He the one that gave Elijah Muhammad the game. That's where he got it from, here in Detroit. That's where it started. That's what I'm saying. This is the blackest city in America. You know, all of those, you know, most of those things that happened with in the civil rights movement. Did you know most of that footage that you see is from Detroit?
Yeah.
Like those Martin Luther King marches. The biggest march ever put on by in the civil rights era by black, you know, that black march was in Detroit. It wasn't down south. It was nowhere else. It was over 300,000 people that marched with Martin Luther King in Detroit.
Okay.
And another little nugget, when they marched, you know, and this is just, you know, this, you only gonna hear this when you talk to your grandma. But when they did the march, when the white people started throwing stuff, Martin Luther King jumped in his limo and sped off with his people. And this came from my homie's grandma told me this. When we was talking about him, and she was like, oh, that Martin Luther King, hey. And she got to going in, and I was like, damn.
Yeah, everybody wasn't rocking with King, man.
They don't tell you that part of the story.
Everybody wasn't rocking with him.
Yeah, you know, like Malcolm X, that's Detroit. Detroit Red. This is the blackest city in America. So this is, so of course we underdogs. We the ones that took on the army. We took on the army in 1967. You know what I'm saying? Like, so of course they didn't want the rest of the black America to know that, oh, y'all got some brothers in Detroit to standing up.
Right.
So we gotta stop this. So that's where all, like, if you go do your Googles, like Figure say, do your Googles, you'll see.
I'm glad that you make that knowledge born to the audience about Detroit, because Detroit definitely does have a rich history and a legacy, and you don't hear it talked about that much at all, especially like you're giving us some actual facts right now that a lot of the younger listeners probably never heard. And I, even myself, I forgot about Elijah Muhammad in Temple Number One. Like, I knew those things, but it's not something that was at the top of my mind.
Yeah.
That's us.
I just want to put it on record. I got major love for Detroit. I love Detroit. I love Detroit, man.
I love Chicago. Chicago is dope.
Yeah, you made that good.
Listen, Kanye inspired me, dog.
Wow. I ain't gonna
lie. Kanye.
Wow.
Huh?
Wow. I know. Yeah, I'm just saying. Okay. Wow. Right, yeah.
Like we got Jay Dilla, but Kanye is who I seen was like, oh man, I could do it. That's who I was listening to. You know what I'm saying? And then we had, you know, like, it just so happened that I just come from Detroit. So, you know, my bass line's a little funkier, but you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, my drums a little better. But you know, that's just the soul in me from Detroit. But Kanye, man, though, you know, that's where it started like that. That's where it started for me, honestly. So yeah, man, for real, shout out to Chicago too.
No doubt. I want to ask you about this. So we're going to get into this. Are you soft for living in the suburbs? But I want to ask you this. How does it feel to be Grammy nominated and a multi-platinum music producer? Like, what does that feel like? Is there like the first time when you actually got nominated, what was the feeling that you had? I'm sure you were happy and all that, but like, how did that make you feel in terms of your view on the world? Did it change at that point?
Can I tell you the truth?
Yeah.
When Detroit gave me a Detroit award, it felt way better. I was so much more geek when Detroit gave me a Detroit award. I was like, what? Oh my God. But with the Grammy, it's dope, of course. You know what I'm saying? But, I don't know, man.
Did you feel like it was long overdue at the time, or was it right?
No, it didn't feel long overdue because I always thought I never thought I couldn't do it. You know what I'm saying? It was never like a thought that it was never let far away as a, you know, in my mind, to be honest with you. You know what I'm saying? It didn't seem like it was that far away. Like, so, you know, like, you know, so, you know, that's just one time. Like,
Did it feel as good as you expected, thought it might feel being in that position, or was it the thought overrated compared to the reality?
You know what? I'll tell you what, if I would have went to the Grammys and all of that, it probably would have been a different experience.
Right, right.
But, you know, getting the plaque and stuff is dope, and having the Grammy on the wall and like, oh yeah, the Grammy nomination, and, you know, and that's cool. You know, it's cool, but I don't know. I'm trying to make a different type of impact. So like, it's just not the, you know what I'm saying? It's dope though. I don't want to sound like I don't appreciate it, because I really do. But you know what I'm saying? Like, it's a dope feeling, you know what I'm saying? But
It's a nice card to be able to play, man. It's a nice card.
I was gonna ask you that because I was gonna say, like, is that one of those things? I remember back in the day, like, people will pull up in a certain whip and they wouldn't have to do no talking after that.
Yeah.
I'm Grammy nominated. It's a lot I don't even have to say.
You know what? Okay, so yeah, if I could walk in the studio and be like Grammy nominated and everybody stop talking, that'd be great. But
that ain't
they're
high.
Not gonna stop talking, but they think they know more than me. So it's like
them dudes ain't honoring that. They don't honor that. And
yeah, you know what I'm saying? Wow. Yeah, man. You work with man. Like, you know, that's cool.
I'm listening to what I got.
I don't even really be on it like that.
Yeah, you know? I know you.
I just be in my own little world, man. Making my own music, man. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's like way more rewarding me.
Because I did my own research to find out your accomplishments. When we talked on the phone, you didn't even get into any of that. And I'm
underground like Dilla.
Yeah. No question.
Yeah, man, I'm underground, man. You know, that's what I'm championing the underground. So I'm like, so you know what I'm saying? I'm so on it, man. You know what I'm saying? So I'm just like,
what's my other dude? My other producer dude I listen to all the time, Apollo Brown.
Apollo Brown, yeah.
And he
Apollo
Detroit?
Brown from Detroit, yep.
Yeah,
Detroit
I love too, him, man.
I never met Apollo Brown, but I'm definitely well aware because he did the Rhythm Roulette and I did the Rhythm Roulette too. So yeah, yep. And then we did it the same week. Matter of fact, they flew here to do Apollo Brown and then they did me too.
Oh, that's dope.
Yep.
I want to give a shout out to Shakina Melbourne, who is the person who connected myself and Filthy. I've known Shakina for many years. I want to thank her for bringing this together and making this happen.
Let's give her a shout out, Shakina.
Shakina Melbourne Esquire, the owner and founder of Upton Esquire. Law. Yes.
I never asked her what the Esquire is about.
I don't really know what that means. I don't know.
It's like the Grammy, man. It's like the Grammy, man.
Yeah. Hey, look, Shakina definitely got Shakina ain't Grammy nominated. She got like 10 of them. She got like 10 Grammys. She done went diamond. She's going crazy.
She got the Esquire, bro.
She a big dog.
And another humble individual, man. Like Shakina is so accomplished at a very young age. Just very humble. I love humble people. So yeah, thank you for that. So now we're going to get into this conversation. So I'm going to just ask you straight out, Filthy. And let me let the people know where we are. So you're rocking with the Money, Sex, Gen X podcast. This is season 3, episode number 6. Number six.
You know what? Before we go, I almost disrespected Shakina. Shakina is my that's my attorney, and she she my manager. So you know, I'll let Shakina.
Okay, gotta do that. Your lawyer and manager, Shakina Melbourne. We're here on episode.
She Filthy Americans.
Filthy American. And I'm going to talk to you more about that too. Episode number 6, are you soft for living in the suburbs? Filthy, I want to ask you this question straight out. Is a person soft? And we're really talking about Black people. Let's keep it a buck. We're talking about, are Black people soft for living in the suburbs?
Dang.
What are your thoughts on that?
I don't think what Black people saw for living in the suburbs. It is kind of funny how some people act when they move to the suburbs, man. Y'all gotta relax, man. Like, I know people that live in the suburbs that act like they gotta get out of the city before the street lights. It'd be like weird. Like they'd be living in the city all their lives and they move to the suburbs. But I understand it because if you watch the news, the news will scare you. They'll scare you. They'll have you thinking everybody is dying every other second in the city.
Yeah, but that's bugged out though, because if you lived in the city all your life, you know better. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just think that a lot of times we're so, and I live in the suburbs now, but I had a crazy route. The reason why I live in the suburbs, I got here because where I was living at in the city burned all the way down, the building that I was living in. So I had nowhere to live.
No, you could. So you saying, Eric? You saying there was no other place in the city You had to go to the suburbs.
Now, let me tell you, though, it's the story. So, look, I've lived.
No, Rock Filthy, you heard that. It was no other place in the city.
I don't know how it is, man.
Hey, you got to keep this in mind, though, man. Everybody got a different path. I'm not one of these people that's embarrassed about living in the suburbs. I like living in the suburbs, you know, but I did. It wasn't something that I thought about. I always walked around and I would tell people I will never live in the suburbs. Dang. I always used to say that. Dang. You know, I just couldn't see it. It just seemed like it was whack to me. But at the time I was living on the north side, the building burned down and I had State Farm insurance. And thankfully I had this insurance. And anybody out there, if you got an apartment, a house, whatever, please get renters or homeowners insurance because you never know when you might need it. So some dude was working on the lower floors with a tool. The tool caught on fire and the entire building burned down.
Damn.
I come home, everybody's standing out on the street looking crazy. We lost everything. My kids is crying. I'm standing there looking crazy.
Terrible.
So I called my brother. I was like, yo, man, I lost my crib. Like, everything burned down. He was like, yo, call your insurance company immediately. Because I'm in shock. So he told me, call your insurance company immediately. Call State Farm. State Farm said, yo, your coverage actually allows us to relocate you, but you have to kind of stay where we're telling you to stay. And I'm like, well, where do I have to stay? They said, we have accommodations at Holiday Inn in Evanston for you to live. I was like, all right, bet. So they got me up in there, and I lived in there for almost 2 months. You know what I mean? And they paid for everything and all of that. And while I was there, I was like, yo, I like it out here.
Mm.
Nice. You know what I'm saying? So I kind of got used to it. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to just go ahead and live in the suburbs. Now, as I'm saying that to myself, I'm still tripping in my head. I'm like, yo, you going to live in the suburbs? Like, crazy. And even before I got all the way out there, people started messing with me. They was like, yo, you live in the suburbs and this, that, and the other. But they also understood that I was there because of fire. So I stayed out here. So I love it. I'm glad that it happened. You know, things came together. But I will be the first person to say, you have a lie if you don't say that the suburbs makes you a little bit softer.
Well, for sure.
You're softer because nobody's shooting at you. You're not really arguing with people like that. You know, the way that people's disposition is just a lot milder in the suburbs. And so that's
definitely not staying dangerous in the suburbs.
Nah, not at all.
I'm from the Wild Hunters, Filthy, south side of Chicago. You may have heard of it. It's global. Wild Hunters, south side. But before when I'm divorced in my marriage, I did not want my kids. There was no neighborhoods that I felt safe in the city where I could let my kids ride their bike and feel cool. I was going to the suburbs for that reason. Now, I'm divorced. I'm back on the block, Filthy. Back on the block. This time, it's like, I don't think the hood will let me breathe the way I want to if I don't get up out of here. I don't think I could have certain things. I think I got to downplay it if I stay here. Yeah. But at least if I go to the burbs, I could breathe a little bit. But the hood... I think they'd be watching. They looking at what kind of car you pulling up in, what kind of shoes you wearing out, looking to see if there's any big boxes by your garbage. You know what I mean? Like the hood is sometimes be plotting is some of the sentiment. Do either of you agree with any of those sentiments?
Not only do I agree with it, I've experienced it, but what I want to say to those two is this, like, are we going to keep using that as an excuse to run to the suburbs, though? Because if we don't ever stay and try to figure it out, is it going to ever?
We don't help the community. Yeah, we got to get our Filthy Rockwell on, bro.
I mean, usually that's just them one dudes next door. You know what I'm saying? All you got to do is just move them. You know, make a phone call, get them eliminated in the neighborhood and safe again.
Wow.
It's never the hood.
Wow. It's been said.
That's true.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it's only them one people. It's like, oh, yeah. Oh, they the problem. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's when the mayor show up. Like, okay, I'm going to make a phone call.
Right. You know?
Like, But seriously though, man,
that's so real.
Just imagine if on the block these little niggas across the street keep breaking in everybody's house, but you gonna move instead of knock on your neighbor's door and say, "Hey, man, these little niggas broke in your house too," and y'all ain't gonna get together and do nothing about it.
Yeah, that's true.
Y'all gonna run from y'all neighborhood. Y'all done bought y'all homes. Y'all done lived in these houses all y'all life. Y'all done grew up in these homes. And this one family on the block, or two families, or whatever, it ain't gonna be the whole block. It's just gonna be them. And you move them. The police ain't gonna move them. You move them.
Yo, another thing that comes up too, and I think we have to be real about this. We had a comment.
They can come home to how your building was. They can come home to that. Very easily, and nobody know what happened.
True that. We got a comment here.
I might be a little sinister, but I'm from the east side of Detroit. Like, no, you not gonna run me out of my house. Like, no, for man. Sure. I live on ancient Indian burial grounds. My ancestors is here.
Wow.
That's where I get my power from, man. Y'all can't run me out of here. If I go to the birds, I'm gonna lose all my juice. I don't know.
That could happen. Hey, we got a comment. Somebody, Rosalind Alexa, said they clock in the suburbs too.
I guess that's a real thing. Yeah,
that's one thing you gotta keep in mind. In Chicago, just because you're in the suburbs doesn't mean you're in a good neighborhood either. You think about the south suburbs and places like that. That don't mean you're good and everything is easy out there.
Thank you, Rosalind.
Man, look, my manager, he live in the suburbs. And the first day he moved out there, he got this rare old school car. The first day he moved out there, they stole it.
The first day.
They watched him. He was moving his stuff in his house, you know, moving his stuff in there. And they watched it and they stole his car.
In the suburbs.
My friend live in the suburbs. And they done stole his car. Like, he got a charger. They done stole his car like three times in the suburbs.
Yeah, man, it can happen.
So, you know, it's just like, you know, I'm not saying it is a lot more comfortable, but you know, because this is the thing, I lived in the suburbs before. I'm not like a person that never lived in the suburbs before. When I was a kid, after my mom died, I moved to the suburbs with my sister. You know what I'm saying? And that was like back when black people didn't live in the suburbs amongst white people. Like, that's another thing about Detroit. Detroit is the most segregated city in America too. Did y'all know that?
Maybe not. I come close to Chicago. I don't know.
Chicago's really segregated too.
I ain't saying y'all not.
It's the most segregated city in the world.
America, look, check it out. In Detroit, this is where redlining started. Y'all know what redlining is?
Yeah.
This is where it started. See,
explain redlining for the people who might not know what redlining is.
Okay, The original wall that they started with the redlining, it still exists right now and it's still standing right now here in Detroit today. So redlining is how, you know, it was a time where black people couldn't live certain places, right? So that's why Smokey Robinson and them lived in the hood with us. That's why Marvin Gaye and them was still in the hood. Like, that's why Berry Gordy and them was still living in the hood, because they had money. But they couldn't move out.
The banks drew a red line around the areas where they were anti-giving housing mortgages to.
Right.
Yep. And so that's the red line is that area that they've outlined for to kind of keep blacks out of.
That's right. Yeah.
That's the reason why I'm saying that started in Detroit, like, because this is where black people, that's why this was the blackest city in America, because this was one of the first places where black people had money. Before any other place in America, black people had money in Detroit, because this is where the cars, this is where the factories started.
Y'all was getting it for
so
sure.
So how would New Yorkers or anybody else have more money than us? Of course we had all the dope. Of course we were buying all the birds. That's where the drug game started in Detroit. Like, yeah, the crack era started, like, and they started in California, but it bloomed in Detroit because it's all black, you know what I'm saying? And we had money from the factory. So that's what I'm saying. But redlining started. This is the most segregated city in America. Even though we had all this money, we still had to live in Detroit. We couldn't move to the suburbs. But also, and I know y'all going to have to do the Googles again on this, but Detroiters are the first people who was to move amongst the white people. The YBI, the Young Boys Incorporated, Butch Jones and them, that was the first time when black people started. Well, before that, it was some other dudes that moved into Southfield. Southfield was a white suburb, but they moved. That's where black people started moving because we had enough money to buy the house. The realtor can't tell you nothing when you give him, you know, all the money cash. He ain't gonna tell you. It ain't black and white don't exist no more. So Detroit is where that first started happening at. But this was like, it's still super segregated. Now listen, I'm not telling you this because I knew this as a kid. Like most of us in Detroit don't even know this. Like it's a place called Cass Corridor here, right? In Detroit. It was the biggest breeding ground. It was the biggest recruiting ground for the KKK. It's in Detroit. I'm talking about in the world, the biggest recruiting ground. All white people, all KKK members, this is where they was at in the 30s and 40s and 50s. You know what I'm saying? And I learned this from a historian that I met. But this is also the place where the headquarters for the KKK is in Howell, Michigan. Mm. So that's why I'm telling y'all all this. I ain't just saying this because I'm just claiming it. No, I know this. I know what I'm talking about. So this is the most segregated city in America. You know what I'm saying? But
you know,
we thrived in Detroit. We made Detroit what it is. We birthed black culture, like for real. Like, so, you know.
Yeah, I can't.
Out of that, we made lemonade out of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to do this on every episode. When we get into these topics, we try to define what the concept is that we're actually talking about. So I want to ask you all, what is the definition of the word suburb? What does that mean?
I thought you was going to go with what's soft, trying to define what soft is.
We can get to that. But we got some younger people.
I guess it's the sub of urban. It's the sub of urban.
Well, it's outside the city limits. It's outside I describe the suburbs as outside of the city limits.
Okay.
You don't live in the city. You know, like in Chicago, we real big about, for example, somebody being born and raised in Evanston, but then when they go outside of the Illinois, they say they from Chicago. Yeah. And you meet another person from Chicago and be like, because you're going to ask them basically, if you really get in, so what high school did you go to? And you're like, oh, I went to Evanston Township. Like, motherfucker, you ain't from Chicago.
These white people are not from Detroit. They are right. Not from Detroit. They be going outside. They are from the burbs. Like,
right.
They did not grow up with us. We do not know them. No, right. They are not from our city. It was all black people. We went to school. Now, listen. Now, I'm joking, but seriously, like in the 80s, like it was white people and black people mixed in Detroit at one point in time. Because when I was growing up, it was the few white people left from white flight. When white flight happened, all the white people left and it was all the black people took over. You know what I'm saying? So all the people from down south and everybody came here. And after white flight was over, that's how it became a black Mecca. You know what I'm saying? But it was a few white people left in the neighborhoods. Them was the only one because they ain't had no money and they couldn't leave. Them was the only people left. But no, like, I've been hearing people like asking me, like, oh man, like Benzino asked me, though. He was like, man, you for real? White people don't run Detroit. And I'm like, dog, what are you talking about? Mm. He really thought that white people was in the neighborhoods, like, just like, I'm like, what? Y'all thought, no.
So man, put it into context. Marshall Mathers. Is he from the city or is he from outside of the city?
Eminem is from, he is from outside the city, but he is also from the city. And the reason why Eminem is from the city, and I can say Eminem is from the city personally, because I used to be around Eminem. I used to see Eminem. Like, when we was young and broke and ain't had no money, we used to get new fresh shoes and walk around the mall. Did y'all do that too?
Yeah. For sure.
Okay, that's what we did. And talk to girls, right? Okay.
For sure.
So that's what we did too. Eminem used to do the same thing. He used to be all by himself walking around the mall. He was Eminem too. He was a rapper. He was an Eminem and he had his project out. But, you know, that, you know, nobody, you know, in Detroit, that hip hop don't really like, that's why I'm kind of like a, you know, like hip hop ain't really a thing in Detroit for real. So Eminem, yeah, he from Detroit. Like, He was like, we was on Runyon and 7 Mile. We was on Beeland and 7 Mile. Eminem was on Runyon and 7 Mile. That's two or three streets over from us. He used to live on Runyon with Proof and them and all of them. They used to all be over there. So yeah, Eminem, I don't think he's born and raised in Detroit. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, he's definitely like, he ain't faking it. Like we definitely.
Y'all give him the pass. He gets the pass.
He was Dusty right along with us. Matter of fact, like for real, he was Dusty right along with us. Like matter of fact, to tell you the truth, when I used to see Eminem, he would always have new shoes, but he would have on the same clothes for like, that's the East Side thing.
Yeah.
He from the East Side like us. So that's what, you know, you might see it, but he would have on it. Like Eminem though, he would have on it all month. The same shirt,
pair of shoes will clean up your whole outfit, bro.
Man, it doesn't matter. He'll keep his shoes clean and his shoelaces clean.
Yeah.
But I'm not cracking jokes on him.
It's just the real thing.
That's what it was.
Like, he was the homie. He was a loner like me. So me and him used to see each other and we'd talk. I had my homies, but we'd see each other and kick it. Like the first time I got on stage and rapped, it was because of Eminem.
And what about Big Sean from inside the city?
Sean is from the city. Sean is from the city, but he like a
See, he not from the city. He ain't from the inside circle. He ain't from the city. But y'all claim him because he put on for the city. But he ain't from the city. Come on, it's okay. Yeah, it's safe. Big Zeno, I love you. I love you, Big Zeno. I love you, Big Sean. They're my brothers. But all right, we're gonna call it what it is. I get it.
See, okay, look, Sean. Zeno lived down the street from me. So Zeno from the East Side, but he used to live down the way, like where the good house is at. But Zeno from the East Side too, but okay, it was a generation of kids that didn't come outside, right? It was a generation of us that did play outside, and then it was a generation of us that didn't really come outside and play. Sean and them is probably, they kind of like the generation of kids that didn't come outside, right? You know, like those kids that like was, that didn't really play with it, like, you know, like, I don't know, man.
You don't know.
Like, that was the thing that everybody would ask me, because Sean is my, that's my little homie, so. When they was coming up, I was like, not coming up, but he was signed to Kanye, but I was a dude that was like, man, you know, where he from? And I'm like, he from, I don't know. Like, is he from the hood where they know him in his neighborhood? I don't think they know him. They ain't know him or nothing, but they knew Shine and Cass, but he went to Cass. Like, that's right.
All my people from Detroit, they like that. They that bougie style, bro. You know, that's them people, man. You know, they good.
See, that's what I'm telling you. And that's why I'm telling you about the East Side and the West Side. Sean went to Cass. Of course, people to wonder if he's from Detroit. He ain't play outside. He wasn't flipping on dirty mattresses. He didn't play in crack houses. He didn't discover his first body in the alley with his friends playing basketball like I did. Like, he didn't run across a dead body like we did. I grew up in the crack era. My little friends was bringing crack to school, and we was like, damn, what's that? Like, we were the kids, and our friends is, you know, bringing crack to school and crazy glue tubes. Sean ain't from that. Right. He's from the era of fucking playing Pokemon and, you know, Nintendo Switch and whatever the fuck they was playing. Like, so, and I'm only telling you because Sean is my homie. I knew him at that time. I know who he is. He wasn't turning up to Blade Icewood and KDZ and the shit that we.
And it don't take nothing away from his artistry or his contributions to hip hop. He's one of the best MCs of all time.
Ask me about Bodie James. Bodie James is.
Oh, I love him. I love Bodie James.
Like me and Bodie James, if I'm going to the gas station, me and Bodie bumping into each other.
Wow.
We at the liquor store, we bumping into each other. We had Shekinah and Tay. We had the shoe store. I'm bumping it into Bodie.
Nah,
I'm at the going to the weed spot. Bodie over there chilling. Like that's me and Bodie James. We really from Sada, and we all really from Detroit. Like
see, a lot of
we wasn't seeing. We wasn't seeing Zeno and Shine and his friends in none of those spots we was in. But
a
we
lot of the Chicago rappers, they from the city, bro. Like Common, 87. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like Prime Fest. Jeffrey Manor. Kanye, 75. He went to I used to work at the school he went to, but it's on the block. You know what I mean? They called him K-Rock. That's a Stones name. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. And then his people moved to the suburbs, but he came back to the city. Like, all them cats, Lil Durk and all them, East Side, them Chicago. Now, Juice WRLD was from the South Suburbs, you know, that younger
gentleman. Oh, okay.
Yeah, rest in peace to Juice WRLD. But
yeah,
our Chicago rappers be from the city. Yeah, Chief Keef, Chicago. All right, Eric, what we got, bro?
No, this is an interesting conversation. I did a little bit of research. We were talking about, and they were talking about the different types of suburbs, and I never knew that there was such a thing. They got the mature suburb, and then they have something called, it's another one I can't find right now, but a developing suburb. So the
actual factuals.
Yeah, this is the actual factual. So the mature suburbs are the ones that they say are located closer to a central city. So like Evanston or whatever is kind of like a mature suburb. And then you got the developing suburb is the ones where it's mostly just white people. It's wealthier and they have a larger white population. The two types of suburbs.
Mature and developing.
Mature and developing.
See, so the west side of Detroit is where that's where they from. So but the west side is the ghetto too, but the west side that's where, you know, it was developed. That's where the working class black people was at. That's where people had money at. If you see the west side of Detroit and the east side, you'll see the difference in the houses and how the houses look. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's where people had money at, the west side. Detroit was a city made for white people, though. You know what I'm saying? That's the other thing. Like, this is called the paradise of the west. I don't know if y'all ever heard this, but the same people that built Paris built Detroit. You know what I'm saying? There was a lot of money here. You know what I'm saying? So they was able to build Detroit. The same people that built Paris built Detroit. So all these houses, you know what I'm saying? They was built, you know, for people with money. You know what I'm saying? But the west side houses, they bigger. It's a lot of houses like that on the east side too, like all over Detroit. But the west side, it's like a little different. You know what I'm saying? So they had moms and dads in the homes on the west side. You know what I'm saying? On the east side, ain't moms and dads in the house. On the east side, crack hit first. You know what I'm saying? Crack hit first. So when you look at the WBI story and, you know, stuff like that, they're going to tell you where they started the hustles at. You know what I'm saying? Like, so this is where, you know, so it just show you the difference between the size of town, you know, the different size. Like, that's a working class. That's working class on the west side. Well, now, like, everybody kind of in the same position, but that's what it used to be, like, the east side. You know, a lot of people didn't have jobs and homeless. I mean, you know.
Is there a south side of Detroit? I never hear anybody reference south.
No, it's a southwest side. Southwest.
See, that side is in Chicago. They got a southwest. We got a southeast. We don't have a real east side in Chicago.
Oh, we don't have the lake. East side of Chicago.
They call it the east side, but it's really.
It's not. It's no really. It's just over east. It's the lake. Over west is the lake.
Yeah, Southwest. Yeah. That's where there's a lot of Mexicans live in Southwest Detroit. That's where the Mexicans live.
Yeah, we got like North Side, South Side, Side West Side. We don't really have an East Side.
It's like that here. Southwest Side is mostly is a lot of Mexicans.
Yeah, see, that's crazy, right? One time I was I wanted to find out why was it like that, and like the East Side, a lot of places, the East Side is where it's, you know, where it's like. You know, where it's live at, where a lot of crazy stuff happened on the east side in a lot of cities. And I was wondering why is the east side where most ghettos at? And I found out it was because of the way the wind blow, which is crazy. But wherever the wind, where down, like where the east side was, where the wind blow, like, that's why, like, you said, like, southeast, you said it's by the river, right? Where's
by the lake? We got Lake Michigan, right? Lake Michigan, yeah.
Right here in Detroit, we by the water, like, it's so weird, but at one point in time, being by the water was not a good thing. So they put the poor people by the water.
Right.
But now being by the water, like now, they just now starting to buy up all the homes and all that property by the water. Detroit then took it all back now. But you know, it's funny how, like, yeah, that's what they put the poor people on the east side.
Yeah,
know?
We in Chicago, we called it, man. If you was, so our east side in Chicago is south, so it's they SEC, they, I mean, ESC, East Side Crazy. And jokingly, okay, jokingly, we call them, and that's people in the South Shore community, mostly, primarily. But we just said jokingly, man, that wind off that water hit different in the winter. Like, you got to be different to live on that lake in the winter. It's you talk about it's cold in Chicago. Go over by the lake right now.
Yeah,
it's a problem, bro. It's a problem. So you can live on the east in the winter. You built for it. You stronger. You just better. You just stronger.
No
doubt. Wow, it's crazy. But man, Detroit is a beautiful city, man. Like, well, like I was just telling y'all, like I had Keith Murray and them, Keith Murray and Hula Dula here, man. And we just rolled them around and took them to Motown, and it was just like they was like freaking out, man. They was going crazy, man. Like Hula, the homie Hula Dula, he shed real tears because he just couldn't believe he was at Motown. I'm like. Yeah. And they was just, I'm like, but y'all from New York? And they like, yeah, y'all think that New York, New York, New York. They like, but nah, man, they this Detroit. And see, these dudes is a little older, so they got a little type of, a different type of appreciation for Detroit. So they was just happy that they was happy to see the Martin build, the building Martin lived in. And they was just so happy to just see Detroit. We just rode them around and just showed them the city. But yeah, man, it's definitely an interesting place. I'm not on here making y'all it sound like it's a horrible thing because it's not. You know what I'm saying? It's just segregated. That's all. But it's dope though. Like it's dope. Like we was able to create a lot of culture like this. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Do you think you'll ever? I know you may have had thoughts about possibly moving to the suburbs at some point. Is that something that crosses your mind sometimes?
Yeah, like what Dog was just saying, he right, like, you know, like it's certain ways, you know, you just have to move and you know, and like he's saying, like, you don't know who watching you and who looking and you know what I'm saying, all of that stuff, like that ain't cool, you know what I'm saying? That ain't never fun, you know what I'm saying, having to even think like that. And you know, just that ain't never fun because you know, like in the burbs, you get to leave. You know, people might be plotting in the burbs, but it's way less likely that they are on your block than it is in, you know, in the hood. Like it's, you know what I'm saying? In the hood, it's multiple people that's hungry and plotting. You know what I'm saying?
I got a question. Is there a community, an affluent community, inside of the city that you could live that would feel like you were in the suburbs, but it's in the city? What would that
I'm glad you asked that. So that's what I was gonna get to. I'm glad you asked that. I was gonna say, so that's what has happened now, right? So now that the city has been gentrified and there's a lot more businesses and developers coming in from all over the world, things are changing now, right? So now you can go downtown Detroit and you can get the same feeling as you would if you was in Birmingham or Royal Oak or these other suburbs. They bringing that vibe to Detroit, right? That's why my homies from the mayor's office wanted me to go over here in the 24-hour economy, because they wanted me to help offset that, because they knew that they was going to do that to the 24-hour economy too. And they like, no, we got to have Black people, original Black people from Detroit in the 24-hour economy helping build this thing, because they was just going to make it another suburban thing. But downtown Detroit, all through midtown Detroit, even on the east side, it's places that used to be notorious, like streets like Mac, like where further down Mac is completely suburban now. It's neighborhoods that was completely, you know, that they didn't the Watusi to and, you know, and switched it up. So, yeah, it's a lot of that. You know, it used to be a lot more decay and all of that, like in 2008 and earlier. But over the years, like really since we got Mayor Duggan in, you know what I'm saying? They done brought the money in. Now you know how it worked. When the Black mayors was in, they was like, oh, no, we don't know where the money at, y'all. As soon as they was out, they was like, oh, wow. It go $300 million. We don't know where that came from.
Wow.
You know, all type of money fell out the sky when the white mayor took over. But when the Black mayors was here, oh yeah, man, we was going through. It was crazy. But the thing is, man, it's still the city where we had money though. So it was like, you know, it was like it what like I've seen what poverty looked like in other cities and stuff, and I'd be like, damn. Like I saw what poverty used to look like for Detroiters back before the riots and stuff, and back before the 60s and back in the 40s, man. And shit, we got it great now, man. Like, I ain't gonna lie, man. We be looking at these houses we live in, man, and we be trapping out of houses, and they got marble windowsills because people with money used to live there. But, you know, niggas that bust out the door and we trapping out of them. And, you know what I'm saying? But this is what was left behind. You know, one man's trash is another man's treasure. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Rosalind says, this is why mixed income, especially for the U.S., is important. Yeah. It's an interesting comment.
Mixed income.
Yeah. Like living, I guess you're saying like resident mixed income living situations or.
One income level, I think is what she's saying.
Talking about the 24-hour economy. I got a question for you, Filthy, and before I turn it back over to Eric, would you say that people should be moving to Detroit, investing in Detroit? Is Detroit the North? The Atlanta of the North? Is Detroit the Houston of the North? Are we sleeping on Detroit, and should we be moving? Should black folks be moving to Detroit?
Yeah, man, y'all sleeping on Detroit because the white people, they done took it now. They didn't. They. Wow. You know what I'm saying? They really. Yeah, man. Like it's so much. Like yeah, man. Like yeah. Black people should have never left Detroit.
To tell Dang. There it is, right there. There it
we
is.
We should have
right
never left. Man. We should have never left.
Should have never left.
We should have never left.
They was you giving away saying? Buildings in Detroit. It was giving away cities.
Listen, man. Coleman A. Young. Shout out to legendary Coleman A. Young. You know what I'm saying? I designed for the Coleman A. Young Foundation. So, you know what I'm saying? But the Coleman A. Young, man, when he was mayor, he... Abandoned houses, if it was abandoned house for too long, he would let you get it for a dollar. Yep. You could buy abandoned houses in Detroit for a dollar. And when Coleman A. Young was mayor, listen, they said, you know, all like most of the presidents, they say Coleman A. Young is the best black president, black mayor that ever lived, for real. When Coleman A. Young was mayor, you had to live in Detroit to be a police officer or work for the city. So it was no, white people couldn't come to our city and make money and police us and beat us and then go back to the burbs and sleep at night. Nope, you got to go to sleep down the street from the person you just beat. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So, you know, see how it go. But that's how it was. You couldn't come to the city and take our resources and move and go back to the burbs. You had to live inside the city limits to work for the city. That was the best. That was great, man. Like, but as you know, 2000, the crisis of 2008 happened, man, and a lot of people left and abandoned their houses, man. A lot of people left and just left the city. You know what I'm saying? Even now, people still don't see what's happening. I get to see what's happening because I'm on the other side of the fence. You know what I'm
Where
saying?
Where are they going, though? Where are they going when they leave?
They move to the suburbs.
Oh, okay.
They move. See, okay, look. So my auntie always used to tell me when I was young, right? When I was all the way from a kid to growing up, she would always say, they gonna take all this. Don't let them take it. She would always talk like that. Yep, they coming to get it. She would always talk like that. These people trying to buy it. They trying to buy it. The land is worth this and that. She always talked about that. So we always had that in mind, like that they was going to always kind of try and take the city back. My auntie, all, you know, my older folks always talked about it. OGs always said it. That was a thing they always talked about. But what happened was the promise for, you know, like you said, we want to live in the suburbs. We all want to live safe. Like, it's dope when I go downtown and I can be in the suburbs. You know what I'm saying? It's dope. And I hang in the suburbs, too. I don't want y'all, like, I be in the burbs. I be everywhere. Yeah, you know what I'm just saying? Like, but we all wanted that, you know, and people started moving out there. A lot of people, they made it affordable for people to move out there. They started doing whatever they could. And black people started moving out there. And white people started moving back. You know what I'm saying? Like, you will see white people, like, in the ghetto. I'm talking about, it was neighborhoods in Detroit where the whole block would be abandoned and the houses would be dilapidated, right? And you will see a white dude riding down the street on his bike in a bike suit, bright colors. And I'm like, what he doing over here? He like, where he coming from?
Right.
And the more we started seeing it, they started moving back in the neighborhoods because it was cheaper.
Yeah.
It was cheaper for them to live here. And our water, Detroit got the best water irrigation system in the world. Like our drinking water is the best water in the world because of the Great Lakes. You know what I'm saying? Did you know that most like 80-something percent of the water, bottled water that's made in America that we all buying out of stores and stuff is made right here in Detroit, Michigan?
I know that.
Or in our area. Yeah, they're getting the water.
No, one thing, our tap water here is horrible.
Our tap water is horrible here, bro.
Like pass out.
Not ours.
And obviously it ain't getting the Flint.
Our tap water is good. Our tap water until they run rust through the pipelines and try to kill us all. But our pipe water is good right now. Like if you get your Googles, like do your Googles, you'll see we got the best irrigation system in the world. Say
get your Googles.
they came back and took it back because you know, and it was always theirs anyway. You know what I'm saying? They just left, you know, and we ran it. You know, and people left their homes, and like most of like what happened in Detroit was, okay, grandma and them own their house because they used to work in the factory, right? Granddaddy and them bought a house and stuff. They own homes and businesses, right? But then they handed those businesses and homes to their kids and stuff like in the 80s and 90s, right. You know, where they passed it down in the 90s and the 2000s. Most of those kids didn't want to live in those houses. They didn't want them houses. And they, you know, they was like, no, they wanted to move to the burbs or rent, you know, those houses got dilapidated. So what happened was, in the early 2000s, when it was a hustle for the crackheads to take all the copper out the houses, that's what they was doing. So they stripped all these houses of all the copper. About all these homes, you know what I'm saying? I don't care if it was a nice house and it was somebody that was just living there. If you didn't go home to your house for 4 weeks, they'll go in your house and take your copper out. That's how bad it was, right? So they, you know, I called them termites at this time because that's what it was like. That's what it was like, termites. Like they just went through the house and just. So you can only imagine what that turned into, a bunch of houses that was really like they couldn't do nothing to. And people that would buy the house, it would cost so much to bring the house back up to code and all that.
Right.
That just caused the, you know, so now when the mayor came in, you know, he was able, they had money to start tearing down all these dilapidated houses. These houses that have been standing since the 60s and 70s, I'm telling you, like since the first riot, it was houses that were still in businesses in Detroit that are still abandoned right now, that's been abandoned since the first riots and since white flight happened when white people left the city right before the
60s, man. You're talking about late 60s, early 70s, bro.
Yeah. Like, it's buildings in my neighborhood, that in my old hood, that ain't never been occupied with a business. And the ones that was in, that had business in the 80s, they still, you know, just never came back. That's where my inspiration to do certain things in my city come from, because I've been here and I've seen it. Like, oh man, it'd be easy to do this. You know what I'm saying? Like it don't take millions of dollars to do it. It just take just a little bit of effort us trying to do it. And you know, I grew up seeing hustlers, and you know, throughout the 80s, you know, people having tire shops and you know, and hardware stores and stuff like that. And you know why I can't have the filthy Americans and run it like a hardware store? You know what I'm saying? That could be my hardware store, you know?
Indeed. Filthy, I got a question for you. Every week we do something called the burning question, Eric's burning question. The burning question I got for you is a little bit off topic, but it's something that I always wonder. I'm getting a chance to talk to somebody that's straight out of Detroit. My question is, why were y'all always so deep at Freaknik back in the day? Did you go to Freaknik in Atlanta back in the day?
You know what? I was supposed to go one time.
I didn't get to go.
My uncle, man, my uncles and them, they started in like before Atlanta was Atlanta. My uncles and them was going down there, man. They had deals and everything. You know why? Because Detroit had Atlanta was like a little hub for us, so we used to be down there. You know what I'm saying? They used to hustle down there. I know y'all know about the Big Meat. That's why Big Meat and them wind up being down there. Detroit was like a little hub for Atlanta. It was always a little secret spot for us. Like Minnesota, that's another one of our little hubs. You know what I'm saying? There's a lot of Detroiters in Minnesota. Atlanta, you know what I'm saying? Like, that was one of our hubs. So, yeah, you know what I'm saying? Everybody coming to Freaknik to party, but we already there. We live there. You know what I'm saying? I'm coming out for the weekend.
Stu, did you ever go to Freaknik back in the day?
My truth is,
I was this close to. I was
never
young,
once went to Freaknik.
I missed out.
I was at, and look, I was at Southern Baton Rouge at the time. I was an undergrad. But that's my spirit though. Where everybody going, I'm going the other way. So everybody flocking to the A, I'm going to H Town. I'm going to hang out with Big Slim and them. I'm chilling. I'm going to H Town where it's slow, steady. I don't like crowds. I never like crowds anyway. This whole pandemic been all right with me. I ain't the crowd person, so I never went to Freaknik. Yeah. Never once been to Freaknik.
Yeah, you wouldn't have liked Freaknik at all.
No, I know I wouldn't have. That's why I didn't go.
Nothing but people.
No, I'm ready. I'm out of there. I'm out of there.
Yeah, man. I was this close to. It was when we was younger, but I was this close to going. But I just kind of like my man. I'm kind of like, I don't know. Like, you know, I probably should go. Back then, like, we used to barely go out of town anywhere a lot. You know what I'm saying? When we was younger, so when we went, it used to be just certain places. So it was kind of like, yeah. You know what I'm saying? It didn't get till we started, you know, going out of town doing, you know, other stuff but by the time we was going to Atlanta, like, you know, or any of that, Freaknik and all that was over with. It was like done, you know?
Bro, I know we're coming up on the end of our shows, episode 6, but I definitely, man, I'm super intrigued by Filthy American. And I know you would probably, Filthy America, I should say.
Yeah.
I know you would love to talk about it, but what keeps you going? Like, why Filthy America, man? Like, tell me, like, why Filthy America, bro? What's that all about?
Filthy America.
Talking about the brand, the whole brand. What's Filthy? Like, I got a brand. I'm not gonna talk about it, but what's Filthy America, bro? What's that all about?
The brand is Filthy Americans. I know my shirt say Filthy America, but this is my album.
It's Filthy Americas with an S.
Yeah, with an S. Filthy Americans.
Oh, Americans.
Filthy
okay.
Americans, yeah.
.com?
Yep, filthyamericans.com.
Okay.
The reason for the Filthy Americans is because we go back to Detroit again. So I came up with the idea for the Filthy Americans because I wanted to create something that had meaning and history, you know, and it was linked to something. So the Filthy Americans is basically about the Filthy Americans, the copper people. The copper people, that's us. We the copper people. The Filthy Americans is the idea came from the copper people, the people that got their hands dirty, the people that, you know, had to struggle and survive to even be Americans, you know, because Americans, that's what they used to call people here. That's what they called you here when they came here. We was already here. They called us Americans. They called us copper. We was the copper colored Americans, the Indians. That's where it all come from. The copper colored people. We got our hands, and then we get our hands dirty. So it's the brand of the creatives. The people, not, it ain't just for black people though. It's just for people who get their hands dirty, creatives, you know, people who, you know what I'm saying?
Super dope, bro. I love it, man. Okay. I love it.
So that's the whole. And the Buffalo, I use the Buffalo because, you know, Buffaloes and Cardies is a Detroit thing, but the Buffalo is because the Indians used to use the Buffalo for everything. Like the Buffalo they would feed the buffalo with, you know, they would use every part of the buffalo, you know, not the native Indians, the aboriginal Indians. They would use every part of the buffalo, you know what I'm saying? So I use the buffalo as my mascot, saying that we the Filthy Americans and we feeding the people. So we using all our resources and everything, you know, giving everything to help with to help the people.
No,
love the concept. Before we have you, We appreciate you joining for so long and really giving us that deep education about Detroit. We got a lot of young listeners to the show, a lot of millennials. people that are like 38, 37, on this subject, or are you soft for living in the suburbs? And I'm sure you would encourage them to come to Detroit and see it for themselves if they haven't. But what would be your final takeaways on this conversation about are you soft for living in the suburbs? What should somebody be thinking about that's a millennial in this regard? Say they're doing well and they're kind of going back and forth about whether they should go or not. What would you say to them?
Man, you know, like you said, like I didn't look at it that way, which like you said, it does make people softer living in the suburbs. You know what I'm saying? It does make you a little softer living in the suburbs, but absolutely. I don't know, like, is that a bad thing? You know what I'm saying?
That's what I wanted to get to. Like, with our culture, are we going to ever get past this whole thing of we got to be hard and we got to be this? And like, why do we have to be the opposite? Nobody wants to be soft, right? We're not talking about somebody that's a pushover. But yeah, is it anything wrong with having a sort of easier lifestyle? Why do we always feel compelled to show the hard side? We got to give our, you know, I used to live in the hood and all. You know what I'm saying? Like, when are we going to get past all of that as a people? Or is it something that's just part of our culture that we need to hang on to?
I think it's particularly when I think about men. I don't imagine, I didn't imagine a lot of things men would be doing that I'm seeing them do today. But I think as men, our natural instinct is to juxtaposition. Right. We're peacocks in a sense as men. Even we have that bravado, man. We do a little back and forth. We test each other's mettle a little bit to see. I think it's just in our DNA and a scientist would have to prove me wrong. But our naturalness is to protect what's ours, to shoulder up. We were not pushovers. Right. So I think we get some of that. I think what you're asking, I think it's a great question, though, man. When is it okay to like just breathe a little easier and relax a little? And maybe where you rest your head is the place you'd like to be able to do that. And that doesn't necessarily make you soft for wanting to be able to breathe easy and not always have to puff your chest out. But I don't know if we're ever going to stop puffing our chest out. I think we all do it as men. I think it's par for the course. That's what I'm thinking as at this point in the conversation.
Yeah. What you think, Filthy?
I think it's never going to be a time that we can do that. We're going to forever have to be like that until the day we die. You know what I'm saying? Because the hunt is on. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, no matter where you go or where you're trying, you know, you can, you know, it's for real. You know what I'm saying? We got our young girls coming up missing and stuff. You know what I'm saying? Like, I watched video, you know, a few years back of these guys coming to our neighborhood, taking our kids and putting them in their vans and taking them away. That's a problem. You know what I'm saying? Like, for us to sit back and watch that happen. In Detroit, it was dudes riding around, you know, doing that, raping women, and people was just filming it on their phones and stuff, man. So, no, it ain't. I think we all done got a little too soft, to be quite honest. We all done forgot, you know what I'm saying, that, you know, it's a dangerous situation. It's a dangerous game being played right now. We all ignoring it and, you know, chucking and jiving, but it's real. You know, it's real out here, for real. You know what I'm saying? It's a lot of things going on that we ignoring. Like, so, you know, I don't think it matters. It don't even depend on where we live at, but the threat is always for real.
Threat is always real, yeah.
But I will agree with you, Eric. I don't think you're soft for living in the suburbs. I don't think but you know, I could see how somebody would try to
stop you
for living in the suburbs. Say it again.
It relax you a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, you ain't as tense going to the. But see, for me,
some people are soft though. Some people, we got to say this too, like, because I've lived everywhere. It's people that live in the hood that's soft as a motherfucker. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Everybody lives in the hood.
Like, I've seen
y'all was just asking me about Shine for this same reason. That's why y'all was asking me about Shine, because y'all like, man, a dude like him can't be from the hood. But it's like all type of people in the hood. Everybody in the hood ain't like like trying to hurt nobody, or you know, like it's more people in the hood that don't want no trouble than do, man, to be quite honest. It goes back to what I just said about the person that's breaking in the house. It ain't the whole neighborhood.
Right.
They want him gone just like you do. You know what I'm saying? It's just that they ain't gonna say nothing. Damn. I'm just gonna be the one that's gonna say something. That's all.
Right.
You know? Yeah. But I don't think people soft for living in the suburbs, but I think, you know, we sometimes let our guard down when we living in the suburbs. You see how, you know, some people change a little bit. You know what I'm saying?
It's softer when you live in the suburbs. Like I have to bear witness to that. I mean, it ain't
you're talking born and raised.
Yeah, I don't say it either. I know people that live in the suburbs that are not, that born and raised in the suburbs, they're not necessarily soft. But I'm just saying, if you come from an urban environment, you're going to get softer when you live in the suburbs. Like, you just are, because you just don't have the same threats that we've been talking about on a daily basis.
Your guards.
A person that's been shot before.
That's
shot
what?
At, damn. What, and all that. And then you're in the suburbs and you don't have to do that no more.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why you got to come outside and bust your ratchet off every morning to let them know. In the birds, let them know you're playing no games out there with them.
It's a good conversation for us to have, because, and then the other thing that I want to say real quick is, with our people, we always go to the physical part first, but you got the whole concept of being soft mentally.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And we don't talk about that part enough, man. Like, I'm going to tell you this. You're talking about us doing the Googles to Detroit. Do the knowledge to Evanston, Illinois.
Yeah, y'all.
Let me tell you something. There's some strong black people out here, for real. And I'm not talking about physical, but I'm talking about people out here fighting for reparations. People are in city government and they're not scared at all. You understand what I'm saying? So we got to start talking more about that. They have made history. They brought a lot of people out here because they got reparations situations happening for black people. They got a fund established. To me and my older self, that's what being hard is about now. You know what I mean?
That's kind of what being hard is about. Because that's the hard part. You know what I'm
saying? That's the hard part.
Yeah, fighting for something for real, that's the hard part. Standing up, you know, being a leader in the community, standing up for what's right, you know what I'm saying? That's the hard part. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's easy to go out there and, but it's hard to stand up for the right thing. You know what I'm saying? Who gonna stand up for, like you saying, standing up for reparations? You know, people stay scared to talk about that. You know, they're scared to stand up for that. And you know what I'm saying? People don't even want you even mentioning that. You know what I'm saying? That's the hard part. That's what I'm all about. I'm all about peace, man. You know what I'm saying? You know, and helping the community and seeing how we can advance and just, you know, investing in the youth and, you know what I'm saying? Like, trying to get them some game and get them the game and correct them with some of the lessons that the stuff that they was teaching us that wasn't the right thing to do. You know, it's all about, you know, trying to invest in the future, because, you know, like most of us, like we kind of set in our own ways and we kind of like trying to just go to work and just, you know, stay out the way, man. You know what I'm saying? We ain't trying to ruffle no feathers.
Absolutely.
The Filthy Americans is here to ruffle some feathers, though.
Yeah, brother.
Brother, why don't you tell the people where they can find all your social media stuff and your website and everything so that they can be connected to your brand?
All right. I'm on. You can follow me on IG. Filthy Rockwell, all one word. FilthyRockwell, all one word. And the Filthy Americans is on IG too. Filthy Americans, all one word. Okay. FilthyAmericans.
Okay. You got any events coming up that we can come to?
Man. I'm doing a jazz event on the 21st, February the 21st. We're doing the Day of Jazz. Like, we're doing the Day of Jazz where we bringing out all these jazz artists from the city. You know, not all, just six jazz artists we're going to bring out from the city. And we just trying to raise money to help this nonprofit called Frugal on the Fly with this they just got this access to a whole floor for women and children. And we just want to help them redesign it and make it more, you know, just better for the kids and the women. So that's what we're doing with the Day of Jazz, to help raise money for that. You know, that I'm all about that. You know, I did, like, for Christmas, we did the Adopt a Block, you know what I'm saying, where we, you know, got all these donations and we got toys and everybody donated toys. And on Christmas Day, we went and we donated all. We went and we took the toys door to door. You know, and it was snowing like hell on Christmas, but that's what made it dope, though. But so that's what we all about. You know what I'm saying? The skate park, like, we all about just helping the community, man. So that's what I'm, you know, I'm just, that's what we all about doing, man. Like, that's all we can do. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Salute to you for that, man. And thank you so much for coming on today. I know people got a lot of historical knowledge. They got a lot of philosophical points of view. And they got a chance to know you better. I feel like sometimes people don't get a chance to learn who the producers are behind some of their favorite artists. So I think it was good for people to hear you directly and see what you're about and have those conversations. So thank you for coming on, man. Maybe you can come back and join us again for season 4.
Yeah, man, definitely, man. And go stream Filthy America, man, my album, man. I got the art exhibition coming out, Dreaming in Color, The Beautiful Nightmare, based around Filthy America, the album. So I want y'all to, you know, just go stream it and check it out, man. And I got the exhibition coming. It's going to be visuals. I'm going to be doing an exhibition at my store in sometime in March, I think we're going to do it. But it'll be uploaded to YouTube and everything, man. I'm going to reach out. Okay. I'm going to shoot it to y'all. I want to get y'all opinion on the album when y'all get a chance to listen to it.
Okay. No question.
No doubt, man. For real.
You got it.
Tell Kanye I'm on his ass.
No doubt.
No doubt. I'm just waiting. All right, y'all, man.
Love, brother.
Peace, brother. Peace. Man, that was a good conversation.
Oh, that's a dope brother, man.
I like him. Detroit's very own Filthy Rockwell.
Man, I
want to ask you, man. I know we went over time, but I want to ask you, do you have any final comments on this topic for today? Like, did your mindset get expanded, or is it pretty much what you thought?
It got expanded, but it's what I expect from you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man, I learned a lot. I think Filthy was a great guest. And I have a slightly different perspective on maybe even not, you know, I'm rushing to move out the city right now.
Yeah.
Maybe not. Maybe how do I find my own utopia, begin to build a utopia
in the city?
Yeah, man.
Similar to what he was describing. That old school Detroit, the black utopia. I love the idea of that 24-hour economy.
Yeah, I had never heard of it. I'm going to do some more research on it.
Makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense, especially right now. Yeah.
What about you, man? It's your topic. You know, and let me go on record. Most of these topics are yours. This is, I'm the wing, right? So this is great.
Hey, Wallace.
In your own development of this episode, did you come out more enlightened, different? Did it turn away that you expected? How was this for you?
It was good, man. I like Filthy was very, he was, when I talked to him on the phone, he was very laid back, but I could see that other side of him today, which was fun, right? You know, that's why I like doing live episodes. You just don't know what's going to happen. And he was very willing to talk about this and to share a lot about Detroit. For me, I just continue to think it's funny that we all have this thing about wanting to show our hood side and not necessarily embrace the suburban part of ourselves or the part of ourselves that really wants to move to the suburbs. It's just funny to me how we've been conditioned that way, you know. And I'm not any different than anybody else. I just think it's comical. You know what I'm saying? Like, we don't have to do anything, but I just think it's funny, man. I think our conversation today, it just kind of emphasized that for me. It's like, when are we going to move away from that? Even myself, that thinking about, like, just think about this. Wouldn't you want to be from the suburb? You know what I'm saying? Like, what? I wish that I had grew up in a multi-million dollar house in Wilmette. Damn. Who wouldn't want that? You know what I'm saying? Like, and don't get me wrong, I'm not, I love my experiences that I've had, but like, wouldn't you want to be in a $10 million house in Wilmette? I mean, it's not but
I think here's the problem. And why we didn't get to dig into it, and I do see the time. So my children, my older children, my oldest children were raised in the suburb. And I think, I wonder if, I haven't verified, but I've questioned this. Do they feel as connected to their blackness? How does that play out in their desire to want to be in the city? Because the majority of black folks in this area of Chicago are not in the suburbs per se, or they're not living as, you know, they're living in the city, man. It's perceived as living rough, right? If you live in the city as a black person, unless you live in one of these affluent neighborhoods in the city, you probably struggling a little bit is the perception. And so if you black and you born and raised in the suburbs, there might be some sort of desire to experience, you know, the elements of true blackness, which comes from being in the hood a little bit.
Well, you know, I've thought about that with my own children, right? Because they're at this point, they're pretty much in the suburbs. But I'll say this, like, why do we, I just want to ask this question. Why do we still connect blackness with struggle, though?
Yeah, well, because it has been, Eric.
It has been. Let me ask that differently. Not connected, but why is that somewhat kind of our main point of reference? Is it because we feel like we're continuing to struggle so much?
No, I think it's part of the conditioning that success only comes after struggle. I mean, how many times have you heard that success is after struggle only, success is before struggle only in the dictionary? Like this, supposedly you got to struggle in order to be successful. And so everybody's doesn't understand it. Maybe you don't have to struggle to be successful.
Yeah, you have to fail. You know, I hear this thing about failing faster and all this stuff, but yeah, you don't necessarily have to struggle. You could struggle and not fail. You could fail and not struggle.
Yeah. So we got Roslyn brings up a couple of good points. Roslyn, thank you for your comments. Street smarts is a large part of it. Pride. I love what BX, she's talking about the BX, the boogie down Bronx.
He's definitely from the Bronx. Shout out to the Bronx.
And she also goes on to say that she's got to raise her kids in the city at certain ages so they have that character. Now, that's that character piece that I guess you just don't get living in the suburbs is...
I guess, yeah. And I can't say that's not a thing. I mean, she's definitely on to something. I don't know why we can't. Here's my thing. I'm trying to figure out how can we give our kids character without living in the city? Is it possible?
I think it is possible. But when you go up, so if your kids go, I mean, I think when they meet and see, this is a larger conversation.
Yeah, we might.
It's like, man, when they meet some people that are from the inner city of Detroit or the inner city of LA or the inner city of Chicago, they're not viewed the same. You ain't from you. It's where do we get that from that? Oh, you don't have the same character, the same perspective, even.
I'll give you an example to your point. Dwayne Wade, right?
Yeah.
Universally respected basketball player. He didn't grow up in the city of Chicago. He grew up in a suburb, right?
Robbins is
worse, like the hood suburb.
Is worse than the city.
Okay. It's
worse than the city. Like where he grew up, it's terrible.
Okay.
Suburb. Like nobody.
That's what wants I was saying to earlier Robbins. In the show. Like you got these suburbs here in Chicago that are not typical quote unquote suburbs.
You know? You go out. He could go out and be like, "Nigga, where y'all from? We from Robbins." Be like, "Oh, okay." It ain't like you saying you from Naperville. No diss to Naperville.
Bomberg or somewhere.
Yeah. Because even if there's parts of Bolingbrook or Joliet, you might be like, oh, okay.
Nah, that's a fair point. Yeah, I don't know. I hope we continue to evolve in that area, you know, and I'm not acting like I'm evolved in that area. I still have my own thoughts about that that really haven't changed that much. But I just feel like to push the culture, we got to stop thinking that everything has to be a struggle in order to like grow. Like, I know we got to fail. I don't know if I'm wording this right, but it's like a person could be in a $10 million home and still push the culture forward if they chose to. Look at Russell Simmons, for example. He grew up in Queens, but he didn't grow up in like a hood or anything like that. Look how much he pushed the culture of hip hop forward. I'm just using it as an example.
See, that brings up, man, that's a huge, man, you bringing up something. This is this is deep. Because I think, you know, when you start talking about, and now we need to go into which suburbs are we talking about, right? And yeah. So now I want to specifically focus on the more affluent suburbs. So if you were lucky enough to be raised in an affluent suburb, right, you would like to think that in an ideal situation, I would like to frame it as your parents were accomplished enough, at least one of your parents were accomplished enough to afford you that experience of being raised in an affluent suburb. Right. And so you are born with certain access at this point, and which may make it somewhat more. It may make sense why, you know, somebody can come and push the culture forward who lives in the suburb, because they had access to certain resources that you may not have had if you were born and raised in the inner city of some of these big, large chocolate cities. You know what I mean? So. Sure. I want to unpack that. Maybe we'll have to bring that back in season four or season five, man, and unpack this portion of the conversation. You know, maybe it's like, how do we push the culture forward? Like some things that we need to do. This is big though.
Yeah, we need to revisit. Cause now I'm thinking about Jay-Z. So Jay-Z's definitely pushed the culture forward. Nas is from Queensbridge. Jay is from Marcy Projects. You know what I mean? So it's like you got your Russell Simmons, but then you got your Jay and I. You know, so it's like I think we just have to accept that the culture can be pushed forward regardless of where you live. It's your mentality.
Sure, yeah.
So, all right, we'll revisit it next season. So I know we went way over. Do we have time for a cool artist outro?
We do. And we have time for, because it's our show, we have time for Characters for Corporate.
All right.
Come on now.
I thought we weren't going to be able to do it.
No, man. We got to do our thing, man.
This is the beautiful thing about having your own show.
Man. It's our own shit, man. And the people want it. The people want it.
All right. So if you're just tuning in, this is season 3, episode 6 of the Money Sense Gen X podcast. Can you believe it?
Unbelievable.
And because this is our show, I'm going to do this real quick too, Stu. I want to shout out to our production team.
Yes.
That is Betty Nelson from Nelson Career Curators, who's consistent with her talent acquisition efforts.
Mm.
Mark Sanders, who is a Howard University Bison, who is running our email campaigns. We got Michelle Presley from MLP Virtual Assistants, who's helping us with administrative tasks. We got little Eric, my son, who's helping with video editing. We have Sakara Fields from New York City, a new addition to the team. Sakara is tearing it up. I saw some really... Our social media game is about to go to a whole nother level.
Yep.
And then we got Taylor Mason, who is a Hampton University Pirate.
Come through.
From Edify Consulting. So I just wanted to thank our team. We couldn't do this without you. Thank you so much. So let's get the characters from corporate. This week, characters from corporate comes from a 34-year-old Black woman from Los Angeles, California.
Shout out to L.A.
Shout out to L.A., I work in real estate as a real estate broker. I work in a very competitive environment and find myself outproducing most of the people on our team.
Mm.
I find myself getting more and more cocky by the day.
Damn.
Struggling balancing success with being humble. I told a member the other day from my team that my network is so strong that I could quit right now and have hundreds of job offers within 15 minutes. I know that I'm the character from corporate, but how do I balance success with being humble?
Wow.
That's one of my favorite submissions. Wow. And that was real. That was real. successful, Stu. You know how it is.
I know how it is. I've been burned by my own ego in the past. My own pride and ego has burned me.
And, so what can you say, though, man? She's trying to balance success with being humble.
Well, at least you know. And I think the what you do is you focus on it every day. Focus on it every day. Look, now I'm about to go here. You've never none of you in 2.5, 3 seasons have ever heard this part of me, but I'm about to go there. You have to ask God to minimize you and maximize Him. Right. Ask God for the guidance. That's what works for me.
Ask God
to help me. Ask God for the guidance. Okay. Eric?
What do I have to say about that? Well, I'll say this. Sometimes you need to be cocky, arrogant, and less than humble to get to where you're trying to go. But maybe you could, you know, a young lady from LA, maybe you can keep a lot of that in your mindset and not necessarily display that or put that on people. Right. So some of the most successful people that I've ever met in my life, they treated other people very well. Even though in their mind, they probably was like, yo, I'm that dude. I'm the illest. I'm the best. There's nothing wrong with that, because that's the kind of stuff that goes on in my mind. You know, I do that for motivation, but I try to continue to treat people very well. So I would just encourage you to create a separation between what you need to do in your mindset to keep moving and how you treat a person.
Yeah, I want to add to another thing you could do is test yourself. If you believe all you're saying is true, put yourself in the water and make sure and see if you can swim. And that's going to humble you one way or the other. The other, you know, going to humble you or feed your ego. The other thing I want you to do is make sure that you are, again, just not trying to take all the credit, like give credit, because some people have helped you get to where you are, even if it's your clients. So you have to add, hey, I wouldn't even be here if it weren't for my clients.
That's right.
Add that into the conversation as well.
Great advice. Characters from corporate. Keep writing in. We want to keep hearing your stories. I like the fact that you all are questioning yourselves. That's the sign of an intelligent person. You're wondering, like, how can I do these things? We're here. We got you. Characters from corporate.
All right. Here we go.
Take us out.
We got a pool artist. This is Chicago. Classic artist, one of the best. I think the audio is going to be fine. We're about to hear from TMC from the 3130s, Oak Hill Gardens. He's going to take us out. We'll see you guys back here next episode, next week. TMC, take us home.
That these shady niggas can't see. Running up, AD, charging like a late fee. Yeah, I got the beam on anytime I leave home. You know I'm coming with that smoke, I got the weed bone. To get my green long, hustling kept my team going. We was back and forth with the balls like ping pong. I'm King Kong, man, I walk in the ground crack. Weed like a group of rowdy niggas that loud pack. Yeah, the ops on the ground flat with a loud smack. I should've went to Northwestern, I'm a wildcat. You know the mojo, I represent the go, bro. Trying to get that dodo, posted like a photo. Niggas talking about he so-and-so, I'm like, Soho? I can give 2 F's like the Fendi logo. Tony.
Until next week, E. We out.